It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Brett, good evening to you. Earlier this fall, the Attorney General Bill Barr had proclaimed that mass mail-in voting would be ripe for fraud and abuse. But today, he chafed against a similar claim from President Trump, saying he had seen nothing so far that would overturn the results of the election.
It was a declaration that drew a sharp response from the Trump campaign. Attorney General Bill Barr telling the Associated Press, to date, we have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election. The president's attorneys, Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis, firing back, with all due respect to the attorney general, there hasn't been any semblance of a Department of Justice investigation. We have gathered ample evidence of illegal voting in at least 6 states, which they have not examined. Some of that evidence was brought forward by Republican lawmakers at a hearing in Michigan today. Allegations that a truckload of fraudulent ballots was rolled up to a voting center.
Can you tell me what it is specifically that you saw that came in?
It looked like there was maybe 60 boxes of those ballots. And in each one of those sleeves or boxes or whatever, there could have been hundreds of ballots. So we're thinking maybe several thousand, tens of thousands. I'm not sure the exact number.
But the attorney general dismissed the idea of widespread fraud, telling the AP most claims of fraud are very particularized to a particular set of circumstances or actors or conduct. They are not systemic allegations. In Wisconsin, the Trump campaign is alleging more than 221,000 absentee ballots were improperly filed, petitioning the state Supreme Court to withdraw certification of the election results. So far, Wisconsin's Supreme Court has refused to take up any of the Trump campaign's petitions. The Senate minority leader today suggesting Barr may be on the endangered species list.
I guess he's the next one to be fired, since he now, too, says there's no fraud.
The president's insistence that the election was stolen from him has been a powerful fundraiser. Sources telling Fox News that since the election, the president has raised about $170 million for the legal battle and his new leadership pack, Save America. But in Georgia today, state officials admonishing President Trump to turn down the rhetoric against election workers and state officials.
Stop inspiring people to commit potential acts of violence. Someone's going to get hurt. Someone's going to get shot. Someone's going to get killed. And it's not right.
Sandy Rios with you. And you thought that I had stopped listening to Fox. Well, I have actually, but I thought I would tune in and see what John Roberts had to say last night. And that's what he had to say. So I wanted to share with you a couple of things. That last statement, someone's going to get killed, that was a Dominion representative claiming that Dominion employees are being threatened and that the president has to turn down the rhetoric and the president's supporters because, of course, nothing is coming back their way. The people that are coming out and saying and what they saw during the election, during election night, poll watchers, nothing happened to them, nothing to see. Well, that's, of course, a lie, and I'm going to get into that in just a second. But it's Dominion workers. They're the ones that are being threatened, and lives are going to be lost. So it's just all a big game, and it's working, I think, pretty well for people in the country who are not paying attention. But those of you that are listening to this show and listening to – by the way, I think One America News is kind of becoming my favorite outlet rather than – well, Newsmax is good, too, but I like One America News. Just saying. This is how this happened yesterday. The AP came out with this headline, disputing Trump, Barr says no widespread election fraud. Okay, so then it goes wild. Fox reports it and everybody reports it because that's a great story. And as a matter of fact, for me, it was a gut punch. It was. I thought, oh, please, General Barr, you've been so quiet. And he said, as John said, a few months ago, he talked about how mail-in he was warning that mail-in ballots are just ripe for fraud. And so now he should say to us that there's no widespread election fraud. Well, then, of course, the Trump team did weigh in. John gave you a little bit of that. They fired back and said that the Justice Department hasn't audited any voter machines. They have not interviewed any of our witnesses. They have not responded. And they say, with the greatest respect to the Attorney General, his opinion appears to be without any knowledge or investigation of the substantial irregularities and evidence of systematic fraud. And let me just say that I'm going to bring you some of those stories today. I watched a great deal of that hearing yesterday in Michigan. It's just stunning stuff. Arizona, stunning stuff. You cannot watch that and be quieted and say to yourself, there's a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but no big deal. It is a very big deal, and I hope to sort of lay that out before we finish today. Now, Catherine Herridge, who is now with CBS, and I trust Catherine. She's a really great reporter. And I don't know if Catherine's a conservative or a liberal. I kind of think she's more tends to be a liberal, but she's always been a very honest reporter. So now at CBS, she tweets then, after AP comes out with that report, from a DOJ spokesperson, quote, some media outlets have been incorrectly reporting that the department has concluded its investigation of election fraud and announced an affirmative finding of no fraud in the election. That is not what the Associated Press reported, that is not what the Attorney General stated. The department will continue to receive and vigorously pursue all specific and credible allegations of fraud as expeditiously as possible. Okay, so just for the record, AP might have misled us. I know they never do that. How shocking that the press, that Fox should join in, and they should draw this narrative that Attorney General William Barr is disputing the president and there is no election fraud on a massive scale. Okay, that's just not what he said. And I just wanted to set the record straight right up front, because if you were as discouraged as I was with that statement or what you heard, just rest assured that's a very incomplete picture of what he said. All right, so I'm going to take you now through these various states and what's happening, because lots is happening. I'm telling you, these state legislatures, I sense some of them are just waking up. Even after their states have certified the vote, they're hearing at least Arizona, Pennsylvania, and Michigan have had these public hearings. I think one is taking place today. And people are hearing story after story after story of incredible fraud being perpetrated on the American people. And it is systematic and is widespread. And the same methods, with some exceptions, are being used in every single one of these swing states. All right, let me take you to Georgia just for a second. Now, the Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, held a press conference yesterday, and he said that Fulton County, which is Atlanta's county, had cut corners on the recount, and he's kind of upset with him. He also said that they have 250 investigations into credible claims of fraud connected to the 2020 election. Now, that's interesting, because he rushed to certify Joe Biden as the winner, and so it's just all very strange, isn't it? Well, Sidney Powell was on with Lou Dobbs yesterday, and they kind of lay out at least a bit of this. Let's listen to clip four.
That's what happened yesterday while we were in the process of trying to get the state to respond for our request to the restraining order. Someone went down to the Fulton Center where the votes and Dominion machines were, claimed there was a software glitch, and they had to replace the software, and it seems that they removed the server.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Do we know where the server is?
No, we don't right now.
People don't go to jail for their attitude. But in the case of the Secretary of State and the governor of Georgia right now, one would be tempted to prosecute based on their conduct so far. What is going on with those two individuals?
I think there's a lot going on, Lou. I think there's a lot of corruption there underneath the surface. We've gotten tips from different people that we haven't been able to verify completely yet, but it seems that there were significant benefits for both Governor Kemp and perhaps Mr. Raffensperger also, and maybe others on their team, for deciding at the last minute to rush in a contract for Dominion for $107 million for the state. Ironically, the state lawyers claimed yesterday that the state had no control over the county's handling of the voting machines, never mind the state itself purchased the machines and forced them to use them. And the Secretary of State is responsible for all fraud investigations of voting and everything else with respect to voting. It was one of the most disingenuous arguments I've heard any government counsel make.
All right, so the irony is that Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, announced publicly, in fact, rebuked Trump supporters. He said there's been no evidence of widespread election fraud, even as during that press conference he announced that there were 250 investigations into credible claims of fraud connected with the 2020 election. He's just sort of twisting himself into a knot, it seems to me. By the way, Joe Biden was certified as the winner in Georgia, leading by just 13,000 votes among millions. So it's a very narrow difference, as it is in all of these states. So, and remember that the runoff election between the two Democratic opponents to the sitting senators from Georgia, Loeffler and that's Perdue, right? Sorry, just blanking out. Whoever the other senator is, and we'll be talking about that more because we need to. Honestly, the Senate hangs on those two seats. If the left takes over the Senate, it is just gone. If Joe Biden prevails, and if they are already not by very much of a margin now because the Republicans continue to win seats in the House, but still the Democrats control the House under Nancy Pelosi at this point today, with the count, and in the Senate, it's hanging by threads, and so those two seats that are up for the runoff election in January are incredibly important to the freedoms of this country, and I will expound on that a little bit more. So that's why Georgia's got to get this straight. They have to get this straight, and so I don't know. That's very complicated. But I want to move to Arizona. They had their hearing on Monday, and it was amazing. So we're hearing little bits now. Some of these media outlets, you know, the major outlets are not recording these things for us. And so we have One America News, we have Breitbart, we have the Epoch Times and others that I'm probably not thinking of who are out there trying to do yeoman's work with the small staffs that they have. And they don't always get these things out quickly. But on Monday, there was a poll worker in Arizona. What's his name? Bobby Payton. He's an investment advisor and he owns his own company. And he analyzed votes. And this is what he had to say. Clip 8.
Basically, what I've identified is that there's between 120,000 and 306,000 fake people. And I did this by looking at the data. I love numbers, but they could be a little boring. So I want to kind of tell the story to the numbers. But basically, what I did is I took a completely different approach than what's been presented up to this point, based on the little that I've heard here. Three classifications for male, female, and then you.
All right, I'm going to interrupt because he goes into a lot of detail and actually goes on for a long time, and I'm not going to play that, but I want to skip to the end of his testimony after he talks about how he analyzed the votes and how he came up with the fact that there were, he thinks, between 120,000 and 300,000 fake voters in Arizona. Rudy Giuliani asked him a question. Let's listen to clip 9.
If you could just tell us in your in the simplest way possible, as an expert, what is your opinion as to the validity of the numbers that were certified today by the Secretary of State and the governor about this election?
If I was an executive at a publicly traded company, I would never sign that because I risk jail time and having all my money taken from me in lawsuits. So to answer your question, I would never, ever have certified. I'd rather resign than have certified those results.
All right, so now after that, Bobby has been removed from Twitter, suspended his account because we don't know why, but, you know, can't allow him to talk about that. By the way, also a woman named, she's the GOP chairwoman in Maricopa County, Linda Brickman, testified in Arizona, and she said that testified that she saw and her Democratic partner witnessed more than once Trump votes default and shift to Biden when they were entering votes in the Dominion machines. She goes into great detail. I wish I could tell you all of this, but we're going to put this article on our Facebook page so that you can read it, but I'm not done, so stay tuned.
Here's a great thing to consider doing right now before the end of the year. Call MediShare and find out just how much you would save by switching to MediShare, the affordable alternative to health insurance. When you call, you'll get some good news and probably be very happily surprised too. The typical family saves $500 a month, but you might save even more. It's so worth it to at least find out. And you'll see why more than 400,000 people are already members. MediShare is a Christian community that shared more than $4 billion in each other's healthcare costs. It really is remarkable, and they're very easy to talk to. And here's the thing. If you join before the end of the year, they'll waive your new member fee. That's another $170 you'll save. I'll give you the number here in a second. The call, and you'll get a price within 2 minutes. And again, the deadline is December 31st, so call now. You'll save even more. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE, 833-44-BIBLE.
I'm Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word since 1938 at only $5 a Bible. You know, before the COVID-19 restrictions came, I visited Papua, Indonesia, where I met Pastor Tandi. He had befriended a witch doctor, a man that was all about black magic, sorcery, voodoo, I mean, all that spiritual darkness, right? And he began to unfold the gospel for this man, eventually inviting him to an evangelistic crusade. The man showed up, not by himself, but with 120 of his apprentices, women and men learning to be witch doctors. And would you know it, having heard the gospel plainly and powerfully preached that night, they bent the knee to Jesus, and they're learning what it means to be new creations in Christ, but they live where it's virtually impossible to get a Bible. Learn how you can be a blessing to these former witch doctors, new creations in Christ, by calling 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD, or by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org. And God bless you for caring.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Feeling stuck? At Liberty University, we know you've waited long enough to move forward. So we're making sure the resilient career you want is closer than you think. Choose from more than 450 degrees, 100% online, for one of the lowest tuition rates in the nation. We've kept it the same for 5 years and counting, and we'll give you college credit for your life experience so you can save time and money. Stop feeling stuck and start moving toward the future you want with a school you can trust. Learn more by texting DEGREE to 49595. That's DEGREE to 49595.
Another iconic brand has fallen to the cancel culture mob, Mutual of Omaha. The insurance people announced they will abandon their longtime logo to address racial equality and social justice concerns. The head of a Native American chief had been the logo of the company for 70 years. James Blackledge, the chief executive officer, told Omaha.com the chief was a symbol of strength and respect, but the insurance company was using a symbol from another culture, and that was not theirs. So their new logo is a lion, a nod to the company's longtime sponsorship of Wild Kingdom. Remember Marlon Perkins, Jim Fowler? The logo features a lion gazing forward to evoke the company's role in looking out on the horizon. Mutual of Omaha also says the lion symbolizes safety for their customers. Well, wait a minute. Lions are carnivores. They eat humans. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We're not allowed to put in our proof. They say you don't have standing. I would like to file one nice, big, beautiful lawsuit with tremendous proof. We have hundreds and hundreds of affidavits. You mean as president of the United States, I don't have standing. What kind of a court system is this?
It was President Trump expressing his frustration with Maria Bartiromo. And of course, he's right about that. I heard a legal expert say last night that the courts he believes are being unfair to the president because the president and his team cannot deliver all the details they need because the very people they're suing are the ones who have all those details. And they're setting up an obstacle that makes it almost impossible to present detail. But I have to say, I heard so much testimony yesterday in Michigan and also in Arizona on Monday, and it's just stunning stuff. So I want to get back to that. I was talking about Arizona, and I want to finish. I truncated the story of the Maricopa County Elections Chairman, whose name is Linda Brickman. And I want to go back to that because she says so many. She's, you know, a person of standing here. She's the Maricopa County. That's Arizona. That's Phoenix. GOP chairwoman. So now that's one of the country's largest counties. And she is a veteran county elections worker. She submitted her testimony in a sworn affidavit under penalty of perjury. And that's what all of these people have done. They're putting their lives on the line. And she said that she and her Democratic partner witnessed more than once Trump votes default and shift to Biden when they were entering votes into Dominion machines from ballots that could not be read by machines. She said she was later threatened by election supervisors at the Maricopa County Tabulation and Election Center for speaking out about what she had witnessed. This is a story we hear over and over again, the intimidation. They were kicked out. Almost all of them were kicked out in all of these states by these poll workers. And I told you yesterday, who trained and paid those poll workers? Turns out it's a $350 million grant from Mark Zuckerberg and his wife. They were helping, you know, in this age of COVID, these workers, you know, manage all these unusual mail-in ballots. And so, yeah, they did a great job of training. They used a leftist organization, and they got what they paid for it. I've heard, you know, they were saying in some testimony that these workers were wearing Black Lives Matter face masks, Black Lives Matter shirts, not just Black Lives Matter. There were one person who testified said that all the Republicans, almost all the Republicans, whichever state it was, were left because they were told it was they could stop and go get something to eat. This was in the evening. But then they were not allowed in. And that's when all of those trucks came in various places at 3, 4:30 in the morning, bringing like suddenly all these ballots. And the person standing up in front of all the counters, they said they broke into cheers after the Republicans were removed. Now, this was a person who was still in the room and said they were shouting, "This is what democracy looks like," and cheering. Yeah, so, because they got rid of all the opposition. And one by one, I heard people say over and over again that they were kicked out for challenging different ballots. But let me go back to Linda here. She said she tried to bring this switching of the ballots when they put it into Dominion to Biden to a supervisor. And we were told that if any corrective action was taken, she said, "I was called outside the room that I was working in for signature verification by a supervisor who said, 'I understand you caused some problems this week and you thought our machines were not working correctly.'" And then she was told she could not discuss anything or talk about what was going on. Many people were threatened. They were told that their voices would be suppressed. They would have to leave the room and not work here again. "I'm here because I think this is our duty to speak the truth." I want to repeat, there was a guy that testified yesterday in a press conference that was done by the Amistad Project of Thomas More Center. He's a young guy. He's a truck driver. And they explained that he has he's been in prison. He doesn't have a great record. And they, his children don't know he has a record. And in spite of that, he's coming forward because of what he experienced. I was going to get to his story later, but basically what he experienced was that he was dry. His route is from New York to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and one other stop in Lancaster. And that's his daily routine. Every day does the same thing. When he, without going into all the details that he gives, he said that on this particular day, it was I think it was the 20th of October. This is when mail-in ballots started coming in. They loaded his truck with these huge containers, which were 4 feet high. And I think he said there was like six containers. I'm doing this from memory. Could vary, but it represented what was likely hundreds of thousands of votes. And he delivered them to his regular location. And they made him sit there for 6 hours without unloading, which was very strange. And he was getting very upset. He's not political. He hasn't been. And finally, they would not, if you're a truck driver, if you understand the process, they usually give a slip to show that you, to verify that you made your run and you arrived at a certain time and you're leaving at a certain time. And the big guy in that facility in Pennsylvania, who he never sees because he's kind of low man on the totem pole, and this was a big high executive, got mad at him and made him leave and would not give him any kind of a slip. So he drove to his next destination, which was Lancaster. He dropped off his trailer and took whatever, I don't know how exactly that works. I guess the trailer detaches and then they drive their truck. He drove it home. He said the next morning he went back to pick up his trailer again and it was missing. He said, this has been my trailer for years. I think he said 3 years he's driven for them. And it had disappeared with all of those cartons in it. And he has no idea where the trailer is, no idea where the votes is. That was, but the point I brought, the reason he came to my mind in this moment is that he is risking everything. He works for the Postal Service, which it sounds like the Postal Service is in this up to their ears. So do you think his job is not in danger? And now his children knows that he spent time in prison. This is what he sacrificed. This ordinary guy, truck driver, this is what he sacrificed. And one by one, all of these people are laying their names and their lives on the line. They've already been threatened the night, the nights they're talking about. They were already threatened, and now they are testifying in public, signing documents that if they perjure themselves, they can be prosecuted. We have so many heroes coming out of the woodwork in these states. And how dare anyone say there's no evidence? People that say there's no evidence are paying no attention. I got into it with some more intellectuals just bloviating about how there's, you know, not enough evidence and we need to concentrate on Atlanta, on Georgia, and those two Senate seats, and Trump just needs to step aside because the rest of it's just kind of a circus. And I was just furious, to be honest with you. And my response to them was, it does no good to be brilliant if you have no knowledge. You have no knowledge. You're not watching. You're not paying attention. You don't know what you're talking about. I don't care what your IQ is. You know nothing. And this is what I'm seeing coming out of D.C. It's driving me crazy. But I want to go back to this. Let me just see. There were a couple of other things on Linda here that I wanted to share. She said on signatures, she said that the standards were lowered from approximately 15 points of similarity when they're comparing signatures, reduced then to a minimum of 3, then lowered to 1, and ultimately none. She was told to just pass each signature verification through. She also observed that the signatures on the envelopes were completely different from even the name of the voter listed, and all of these were sent through. She calls them egregious irregularities, and she would not agree to certify those votes. But what happened was, on while they were having this hearing on Monday, Arizona's Secretary of State, along with the governor, Ducey, certified the vote in Arizona. Didn't just rushed ahead, didn't care, wasn't listening, just went ahead and certified those votes. So now it's up to the legislatures in these states to do something about it. And I actually have a feeling that they might do it. I want to go to a different state in a minute. But on Arizona, one more thing, retired Army Colonel Phil Waldron, who's a cybersecurity expert, testified that an anonymous email from a Pima County tech provider alleged that 35,000 votes were illegitimately given to every single Democratic candidate in the county. They just added 35,000 votes to each office, you know, person candidate running for office who was a Democrat. And so that's just one of the stories. There's a great article. It's from the Daily Signal. It's titled, Four Takeaways from Arizona's Election Fraud Hearing. We'll put that on our Facebook page so that you can read it. I want to go to a different state. Let me go to Pennsylvania. Let's see. In Pennsylvania, they have the Trump team has appealed to the Supreme Court. Ted Cruz has weighed in on this, and he is urging the U.S. Supreme Court to hear the emergency appeal on Pennsylvania on the Pennsylvania election challenge. This has to do with equal protection under the law. I don't think I should stop to explain this, but the point that I want to make is that Senator Cruz is weighing in support. And, of course, he is an expert on constitutional law, and he was a clerk for the Supreme Court, and his word matters. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which is, I think it's something like 5-3 Democratic-controlled, or maybe something maybe even greater than that, they've just refused to hear anything. And so there's so much egregious stuff happening in Pennsylvania. And by the way, the legislature in Pennsylvania has manned up. They're probably the boldest we've seen in the country. And I don't think they're going to let this stand. And they are actually considering their options as a legislature. Let's see. Now, in Michigan, I want to move to Michigan because they did their hearing yesterday. It was amazing to me. There was a postal worker from Traverse City, Michigan. I think we have a clip of him. Let's see. This would be clip 12. Let's listen to his testimony, just him saying, telling his story. Let's listen.
What time of the morning was it when you saw this come in, or what time of the evening was it?
Like I said, 3-ish, 4 in that window.
In the afternoon?
No. I was there from
3 or 4 in the morning.
I was there at 10 p.m. to 5 a.m.
They were in male sleeves, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody have any earmarkings of who they were carrying these ballots? Were they carrying them? Were they on a dolly?
Yeah, they were on a dolly. Yeah, they were on a dolly. Do I know who they were? Absolutely not. But there were people that were doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Lucido. Senator Santana.
Was there any particular reason you didn't ask for a supervisor to question, you know, the ballots coming in on a dolly? Or?
Well, I didn't figure I needed to because the lead counsel that was supposed to be there was taking tally, and I was there standing right next to him. So I figured he was kind of the person that was overseeing the whole night. But that's what we were told. No, we were talking directly about why are these coming in. We all thought it was interesting that these ballots were coming in so late. What was his response? So we were trying to take...
Sorry.
What was his response, sir?
We were taking count, and we were... his exact response, I couldn't recall. But we were definitely perplexed that these were coming in so late, as well as they were being put out to be counted.
That's not the clip I meant, but that's okay, because in Michigan, there were lots of people that testified about these ballots showing up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning, coming in from a different door. And the irony, of course, as I told you before, they had sent the Republican. Remember, they decided to stop counting? Remember that? You heard it. If you were watching the election night, you actually, you're a witness, too. You saw them announce that they're going to shut down counting, right? Well, they did that in, I don't know if they did it in all these swing states, but they did it in at least 3 or 4 of them, maybe 5. And so, but not everyone left, just the Republicans left. And the Democrats stayed on, and they some of them were sleeping at their desk. That's what one person described, playing video games. And then suddenly this truck arrives, and they get energized, and they have their marching orders. We don't know where those votes came from. But the one I was going to tell you about, there were some U.S. There's some postal workers. I told you about the one in the press conference yesterday with the Amistad Project, but there was another one who talked about how he was instructed they were bringing in 100,000 ballots, and they were going to be backdating because the ballots came in late, and they wanted them to back the postal workers to backdate the ballots that came in to Tuesday, Election Day, so that they would be valid. And this was a story that was told by several postal workers. You remember that James O'Keefe of Project Veritas did an undercover video with another postal worker who had told this story a couple of weeks ago. All right, so, okay, so I just want to make sure I get all of that. Was in Traverse City, Michigan, where a postal worker said that the ballots were backdated by postal workers. And Trump campaign mail was put in bins labeled undeliverable bulk business mail, while the same type of mail for Joe Biden was ordered to be delivered on time. And this story was told by several people, too, around the country. And then, of course, the Dominion machines. It was Jesse Morgan. That's the name of the brave, you know, postal driver that had been spent time in prison, who got up in his own, you know, just plain guy way, talked about that he had moved 144,000 to 288,000 completed mail-in ballots from Bethpage, New York to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and then his truck bed disappeared. And so then there was another postal contractor named Nathan Pease. He was told by two separate postal workers on two separate occasions that the USPS in Wisconsin was gathering over 100,000 ballots on the morning of November 4th to backdate. So the U.S. Postal Service, at least parts of them, if not officially, were all in on this. So many things to tell you and so little time. I'm going to have to sort of delay this for a little bit more till tomorrow. We have a special guest coming up next, and you'll want to hear that story. We'll kind of lighten things up and just kind of round out our mind, because you can get so... Trust me, you can get into the vortex of all of this and lose your perspective, and I don't want you to do that. So we're going to get some perspective when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Listen to Don. Tune in every week.
Dr. Greg Smalley of Focus on the Family.
Listen to the wisdom this man gives and emulate that. Don, you do that so well. I definitely have learned over 20 plus years that we've been doing radio together so many things from you. So find a guy that you look up to and just start learning.
Encouragement Live with Don Hawkins. Saturdays at 7:05 p.m. Central, 8:05 Eastern, here on American Family Radio.
Christmas calls for Christmas music. Get it now with the AFR app.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come.
Download the AFR app for free from your local app store and enjoy Christmas music from AFR all season long.
Mary, did you know that your baby boy...
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio.
We want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In the burning bush encounter, scripture records that it began as Moses kept Jethro's flock. When the Lord saw that Moses turned aside to see, he called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses, and he said, here I am. Notice God didn't speak to Moses until he gave full attention to what God was trying to show him. Diligent attention to daily duty is necessary. We must be careful, however, not to allow duty to become an idol. Are our hearts still sensitive to God? Can God still get our attention?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. Mark's gospel describes what Christ suffered in order to save us. He endured gross injustice and the insults of ordinary men, religious and political leaders, and even common criminals without saying a word in his own defense. He refused to save himself, though he could have, so that he could save us. He was forsaken by God at his greatest moment of pain so that we could be forgiven and received into his presence. The veil of the temple was torn, not from bottom to top as man would do it, but from top to bottom as only God would do, opening a new and living way through his shed blood into the very presence of God himself in the Holy of Holies in the true tabernacle in the heavenly places. May we have the confidence to draw near to God even this day, with the full assurance that he will receive us and will meet with us.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 1:05 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, Attorney General William Barr made a surprising statement to the Associated Press. He said, quote, "To date, we have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election," unquote. It seems the operative words are, "To date, we have not seen." The Justice Department later clarified that its investigation of election fraud in the 2020 presidential race is not yet concluded. In response, Trump attorneys Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis asked whether it's even begun. American voters deserve to know whether the Justice Department has actually been looking for such evidence. If so, where? In Philadelphia? In Atlanta? In Maricopa County? Or in any of the other three counties where what professional fraud detector Jay Valentine has called, quote, "the greatest fraud in history," unquote, manifestly took place in recent weeks? General Barr, see something, say something. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios with you and happy to be back. And I have been telling you all week that we are following up with our Operation Christmas Child Shoebox effort. And I know that many of you participated. Some of you may not have, but you're still going to benefit. It's probably too late to do that part, but it's not too late to do this part. And what is this part? This is really the nut of the project. It is the heart of things. Because, as I've said before, but I'll say it again, you know, through the decades, the church, meaning the universal body of Christ, especially in the American church, decided that just helping people, feeding them, food pantries, clothing them, social work, all of that was really, in fact, the gospel. But the gospel itself, the good news of the redemption, the forgiveness of sins, the need to be forgiven, was sort of dropped. And so it became what we call the social gospel at the time. And I have to say, those churches in due time lost their power. They lost their fervor. I think of the Methodist Church, which was filled with power with John Wesley and the Wesley brothers, the great hymns of the faith. But they became probably one of the most, one of the first churches to embrace the social gospel, which meant that people who sat in the pews and people who were helped by them never even heard about, really heard about Jesus, maybe just his name, but not understanding the redemptive work. And so I say all that to say, a Samaritan's Purse, one of the strengths of the work that they do is that at the heart of what they do is the message of the gospel, the life-transforming thing. It does no good to paint on clothes, to put on makeup. I know there's this great proverb that I'm thinking of about how, I only think of the punchline, but it's basically something about a beautiful woman that lacks discretion is like a pig with a gold ring in its snout. In other words, we have to transform the inside, and that's what Samaritan's Purse is doing. Now, Operation Christmas Child sends the kids some great stuff. It meets their physical needs and makes them happy and gives them some, lets them know someone cares about them, but it wouldn't be really effective if the next part wasn't completed, and that is the greatest journey. It's a 12-lesson discipleship course in the child's native language. And if you would like to help us get that message to these kids, now they're getting the shoebox, but if you want to help the follow-up, it's $6 per child. And so if you, of course, can do that math, and I know you can, if you have $60, that will reach 10 children, and $150 will reach 25 children. So if you'd like to help us do that, you can call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or you can donate online at afr.net. Well, I have a special guest this morning, and her name is Hannah Bolvey. Hannah is with Samaritan's Purse. She's the greatest journey development manager for Operation Christmas Child. Good morning, Hannah, from wherever you are. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Sandy. It's wonderful to be with you.
Hannah, you know what? People are not just assigned. I know you're overseeing all this. People are not just randomly assigned a job like this unless they have a heart for it. And I'd be curious to know where your heart for doing this, this role, playing this role with Samaritan's Purse comes from.
Well, that's a great question. I spent many years in children's ministry here in the United States and really saw a need for us to take children's ministry and specifically the discipleship of children more seriously. You know, I believe that God's word teaches us that children have an inheritance. You know, of course, we know that they are the future. And we just really saw that teaching them basic morality, teaching them virtue-based, life principles was just simply not enough. These children needed to be discipled. You know, they have small bodies, but they still have eternal souls, and they still process and think through big, hard things. And so it was from a passion and a heart here in the United States working with children that the Lord eventually called me into this role to have the privilege of working with one of the largest discipleship programs in the world for children.
Hannah, I just have to, as a personal word, I had a really dramatic, I know it sounds odd, a dramatic conversion to Christ when I was 9. And I was introduced right away to God's word and spent, you know, my life, you know, learning, memorizing scripture. And it is, of course, the foundation of what I do now. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I still remember my little girl self learning all those things about God. You don't feel much different in your heart and mind. Your soul is continuous. And even if you're small and young, it's the same as when you get older. You're the same person inside. And yes, I'm with you. You need to be discipled. You have to learn. All right, so how does this work exactly? Because I don't think people understand how you get this curriculum to the kids.
That's a great question. So the discipleship program really starts several weeks before the shoeboxes even arrive. You know, in every nation in which we work, we have a national leadership team, which is a team of national volunteers. So Ugandans from Uganda, Hondurans from Honduras, etc. And they are working to build a strategy for using shoeboxes as a tool for the gospel to reach the least reached in their nation. You know, we don't send shoeboxes to the same places year over year. We're trying to really push back the boundaries of the darkness. And as a part of that program, as we're working with the local churches in these communities to really train and equip them, we hold a teacher training event where we bring in whoever the kind of the closest, most local body of believers is to where the outreach event is going to happen for shoeboxes. And we train them to begin to be able to lead this discipleship program. So really, before the shoeboxes even arrive, there is a plan in place for long-term follow-up with shoebox recipients. There's a plan in place for local believers who know the language, know the culture, and are already invested in their community. There's a plan in place for them to follow up with kids. And then after the children receive their shoeboxes and that, you know, fun, high energy shoebox outreach event, after all of that happens, it is at that point that we bring the children back. They're invited to come back for this 12-lesson discipleship course.
That's interesting, because I didn't realize that's really what you just said. Actually, part of it really jumped out at me, and that is that you use these shoeboxes as kind of an outreach to kids that are not, you haven't reached yet, to build a relationship and then bring them the gospel. I love that. I believe that's biblical. Yes, I do. And by the way, if you'd like to help do this, it's $6 per child. It's just $6 to do all the things that Hannah just described. And if you would like to help us in whatever denomination of six, a multiplication or a multiple of six that you can help, we're asking for your help today. It's 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can donate online at afr.net. Now, Greatest Journey was launched, what, 11 years ago? So by now, Hannah, I'm thinking you probably have stories of the ways you've seen this affect children. So tell us a story about how this has worked in even just one child's life.
Well, of course, there are millions of stories. You know, as of this last year, we have had, over 5 million children participate in the Greatest Journey. So there are literally millions of stories. But I think probably one of the most kind of profound things that we hear again and again and again is the effect on a child, especially living in some of the cultures in which they live, of hearing that they are on purpose, that they are made in the image of God, and that their life has meaning and value. Just as it is, you know, many of these children come from cultures where they are not valued, not appreciated. Many of these, especially the young girls, really hear a very different narrative of who they are. And so, you know, different lessons along the way really jump out to them. But I think one of the things that just a quick story would be a few years ago, we had the opportunity as a ministry to kind of update some of our materials. And one of the lessons that we changed was the story. We took out the story of Zacchaeus. No offense to Zacchaeus. We still love that story. It's still a wonderful teaching tool. But we put in the story of Mary and Martha and Jesus coming to the house of Mary and Martha. Because really, you know, here in the West, I think we misunderstand the heart of that story. That story is really more about the fact that Mary was, as a woman, was sitting in a room of all men. She was sitting at the front of the room. She was in a very dangerous situation culturally. And when her sister comes to the door, I'm sure you're familiar with the story. Her sister comes to the door and says, "Lord, tell my sister to come and help me," in a shame culture. She's actually asking the Lord to publicly shame her sister in order to save her sister's life, because Mary's in a very dangerous place. She's basically usurping her place as a woman. And if any of the men in that room took offense to that, she would have serious consequences. in that culture. And so when the Lord says to Martha, 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 you're troubled and worried about many things, but only one thing is necessary. Your sister has chosen what is better, and what she has will not be taken away from her. That's kind of a mic drop moment for women, because in that moment, Jesus basically gives women the right to be his disciples, to be sitting in a place, not you know, in the old Jewish system, there was the outer court for Gentiles and women. In that moment, Jesus was saying, no, she can be in the room. She can be not only in the room, she can sit right at my feet. She has the place of honor. And I think when we go into some of the cultures in which we work and we are able to teach that story and we begin to see the light bulbs turn on for the little girls to say, hey, I can be a disciple too. That in the kingdom of heaven, there is not a hierarchy. There is a privilege and a responsibility to bear the image that God has given me well, but it is not a lesser image. I think that is really a light bulb moment for a lot of our girls.
You know, it's funny hearing you say that, Hannah, because we live in such a different culture where I think we have girl power here. We have so much girl stuff going on. I'm kind of sick of girl power and feminism, to be honest with you. But in other cultures, we have to remember that there still is tremendous suppression and mistreatment because of being a female. And so we need to sort of put our mindset in a different culture where women really are, you know, often stoned and killed because they, as you said, they usurp their so-called position in that culture. So it's pretty radical to tell a story like that to them. Mm-hmm. So it's Operation Christmas Child, and the curriculum is called The Greatest Journey. And if you would like to help us, all you have to do is call 877-616-2396, and they will explain it to you. But it's $6 for each child in whatever country. How many countries, Hannah?
Well, it changes year over year because, again, we're always trying to go to the least reached and hardest to reach countries. Right now, we're in the middle of a five-year initiative to take the gospel to a 500,000 children on 1,000 islands in the Pacific. So, you know, that's going to change our numbers. But it's a little over, right around about 100 countries a year that we are teaching The Greatest Journey in.
Well, if just the translation alone must be a huge challenge, and I'm sure that's part of this expense. Yeah, so well, let me just say, it's again, the phone number is 877-616-2396, or you can donate online to AFR.net. That's AFR.net. In fact, about that translation, does Samaritan's Purse do that, or how do you guys do that?
Great question. Well, it depends on the context. It depends on where in the world we're working. We have definitely do some translation here in-house or with partner organizations. We have a beautiful partnership with an organization called the Seed Company, which is a branch of Wycliffe Bible Translators, and get to work with them on some of our more creative projects. You know, we're there's a few people groups that we are working with that do not have a written language. And so translating discipleship materials into a language that is not written certainly has its own challenges. So so it really is going to depend on the context.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. Oh, I have to say also, you are developing an app. Let's see. Is it ready, Hannah? Or just 10 seconds, really. It's ready.
Okay.
So what do
it's
we call
ready.
It?
Greatest Journey, Apple and Android. Go look it up. It's great for kids here in the U.S.
Okay, great. It's for kids. Okay, Greatest Journey app, and download that. And that's a discipleship training right there with the app?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sending it to my kids in Scotland. That sounds phenomenal. The phone number is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Will you help us with Greatest Journey? Sandy Rios in the morning. Hannah, thank you so much.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.